Welcome, everybody. Once again, we're here at the Amy Barn. As always, I'm joined by my good friends, Johnny Wake, Sephra Alexander, and my friend and boss.
Alexandra.
My really good friend, Alexandra. And my boss, Joe DeSantis.
I'm not a boss.
Well, we'll see. We've got Marion and Andrea behind the camera with us today. This podcast is going to really kind of take your breath away, I think, here. This is Travis Roy, who's got an amazing story to tell. And this is again, one of these kind of emotional ones. This is a guy who's could be crying about himself, could be crying about his circumstances. He's in a wheelchair. He's a paraplegic. And yet he's got a force of will and a mindset just to carry on. And I think when you hear him speak, well, you did the interview. I find him to be an amazing guy.
I was having a really tough day, as most days are in business. And I walked downstairs and I sat with him. And within 2.5 seconds, I said, I can't complain about anything. And when you just said, hey, we're going to be talking Travis Roy, I just said, can't complain about anything. Wait until you see this. This is a game changer.
We are here for Spartan Up Podcast. We are in Boston on a whirlwind trip, and we are with Travis Roy. And our trusted camera person behind the camera, Marion, suggested that we should have interviewed Travis first because he's got all the good tips.
I've learned a little bit over the years.
The other thing, I'm having a bad day. And I don't typically have bad days, and I'm not supposed to complain because we go out to the audience, we say there's nothing to ever complain about. But and I meet you, and you're such an inspirational story, and I'm like, you know what? I got nothing to complain about.
It's all relative.
I'm now having a good day.
It's all relative.
It's all relative.
Yes.
So, talk to me. Go back in time. You had an injury. What happened?
So let me start a little bit before that, if you don't mind. I grew up in Maine. My dad, when I was first born, he managed a local ice arena. 20 months old, he found a pair of skates small enough to fit on my feet, and from that day on, it was something fun to do. And shortly thereafter, it wasn't long before it became a passion. And so, I 15 years old, I went to lots of summer camps and at those camps.
You were hockey through and through.
No, you know what? I took a lot of pride in being a well-rounded kid, so I played all kinds of different sports.
Got it.
Soccer, tennis, lacrosse. I enjoyed art.
What were you great at?
Hockey. And hockey was my thing. Hockey's what gave me my confidence.
But you had a shotgun approach. Your parents had a shotgun approach. Go do everything.
They did. And I, you know, I'm a big fan of that. I'm an advocate for that at this point. But so at those camps, they were always talking about setting goals, and I didn't really think much of it until my freshman year in high school. And I literally went into my bedroom, sat down at my desk, wrote out all these goals, and predominantly hockey goals, and at 15 years old, I knew what I wanted to do. I knew where I wanted to go. I my three dream goals, what I refer to them as. And first one was, I want to play college hockey. I want to earn a Division I college scholarship. Secondly, I want to play in the NHL, and I thought, I don't want to sell myself short. And I, bottom of the line, I want to play on the U.S. Olympic hockey team, and I kind of devoted myself to that, and did the right things to the point where I had lots of scholarship offers all around the country to Michigan or Maine, and finally opted to go to Boston University, defending national champions, and they were kind of the premier hockey program in the country at the time, and it was all a dream come true. My very first game, my very first shift, 2 minutes of the game, we scored, and the old Walter Brown Arena at Boston University. It was a lot of energy in there, and I was pretty excited, pretty amped up. And they dropped the puck, and we won the faceoff, and puck got dumped into the offensive zone. I just skated in there as fast as I could, and opposing defenseman picked up the puck, and I thought I'd deliver a big check and kind of make my presence known. And I may have been a little kind of, well, probably on the edge, maybe a little past the edge, and I just didn't hit him as squarely as I'd hoped, and I deflected off him, and went head first in the dashboards and burst my fourth and fifth cervical vertebrae. And so the dream, the goal that I'd worked out for the first 20 years of my life was, I lived it for 11 seconds, but I could say they're the best 11 seconds of my life.
Yeah.
But I also knew, as I was laying on that ice face down and seeing my warm breath start to melt the puddle in the ice, that I was in big trouble, and my life was more or less over as I knew it. from then on, you know, it was 6 months in the hospitals and lots of challenges. And
how do you pick yourself up from that? I mean, there are people out there right now listening or watching, right? Or me this morning, I said I had a bad day, and they're complaining or they're upset about something. And how do you get through it?
One of my fundamental motivating factors in life is just my sense of pride.
But at that moment, or the next week, or 2 weeks, or month?
At first, it had a lot more to do with the people around me, my parents, my sister. I couldn't give up for them. Not only did I not want to give up, but I wanted to, I didn't know what I wanted. It's such a tough time, those first weeks and months, and you just don't know what kind of life you're going to be able to live. I mean, I kind of assumed I'd spend the rest of my life kind of living in attachment on my parents' house, and there wouldn't be much quality of life. But I loved my parents, I loved my sister, and I had good friends, and I knew I couldn't give up. I think it was more for them initially than it was for me. I had a unique situation. That the accident was on TV. It was a lot of publicity. There were people that made little sacrifices, letters from, 10-year-old boys who donated, $10 just so I could, to help make my life a little bit easier there. And people made big sacrifices. There was a couple that planned their honeymoon down to Australia, and they opted to forgo the honeymoon and send a check to me to help me cover my cost of living for the rest of my life. And there were a lot of little sacrifices. So really, it's a fortunate piece to my story. For the last 21 years, I've just felt like people are rooting for me. And when you wake up every day and you kind of feel that, it's an added bonus. But the bottom line, though, is it does come back to just my own little kind of sense of pride. And not letting let myself down, not letting let my family down, not letting let those strangers down that have supported me. And I don't know that I'll ever accept this injury, but I've always kind of committed to myself that I'd make the best of it.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. I can't complain. I can't complain, right? I mean, one moment, it's almost like I have four children. I'm listening to you, and I want to teach the kids. It's one moment, right? It was that one moment on the ice, hitting the panel in the wrong direction.
Yeah, no, it was. I do some talking to different groups, and I always kind of refer to, I get a little theme that I talk about. It's sort of there's times in life when we choose our challenges, kind of set our goals, and we kind of plan our lives, and there's other times when the challenges simply choose us. Right.
That is a great saying. 300 interviews.
There you go. Yeah,
you choose your challenges at times, and sometimes the challenges choose you.
And it is. It's what we do in the face of those challenges that really defines who we are, and more importantly, who we can and will become. As I say, I spent the first 20 years choosing my challenges, set my goals. It was fun to kind of feel like you're in control of everything, but that's generally not how the way life goes. I mean, whether you do more often than not, there are some significant challenges that choose you, but it was, the values that I used to kind of earn my scholarship and kind of get to where I was at with my hockey career. And slowly I figured out it was going to be the same values that helped me figure this one out as well.
Hey, you're going to definitely want to join us next week. Our guest is Jesse Itzler. And if you've ever wanted to figure out how to make your life more interesting and bring different people in for different perspectives, this guy does it in spades. He invited a Navy SEAL to live with him. He traveled and spent time with the monks. You're going to want to see everything this guy has to say. Really, really interesting stuff. So,
just the everything that we have to say, subscribe on iTunes or YouTube, and we'll see you each week. Join us.
So you were saying you want to start to spend more time making money and less time having fun.
Not quite. No, and it's not necessarily, just sometimes we focus too much on kind of making money and not enough time kind of making our happiness. And this society is spinning so damn fast and trying to get control of it and trying to kind of maintain that focus. So that's, uh, something I'm trying to figure out, sort of my own in my personal life, and just realizing that, boy, it's a simple thing. It's a sitting around a fire pit with some buddies. You know, it's going out and just having a nice dinner. You know, it's just trying to slow it down, trying to create those moments that are real where the conversations go beyond, you know, how are you doing? How's work? How's the kids?
Sure.
You know, to just get to that next level, I feel like this society's sucking that out of us, that we don't even know how to do it anymore.
Well, I mean, you go anywhere, whether it's a restaurant or fire pit or anywhere, and it's we do it, right? And you're sitting there typing to each other.
Yeah, the technology certainly, it's become a daily. We think it's a priority, but it really isn't.
I'm going to do a whole video series at some point. I was supposed to do it in January, where I smash my phone and my computer and completely disconnect.
Can you imagine how good that would feel?
Oh, it's going to be great. Maybe I'll light it on fire.
However you do it, but it's funny, these little gifts that sometimes I realize it kind of came with this injury. I can't literally go pick up my telephone. It's
you're
great.
You're lucky.
I can't be thumbing through it and looking at my Facebook or any of that other stuff. And yeah, it is. I'm glad. You know, I can't take it out and put it on the table at a restaurant, you know, like yeah. everybody's doing. And I just, so anyways.
Let's talk about the foundation, your foundation.
Real quick. After my injury, there was just a lot of goodwill. There's money raised for me. I had great insurance and good family. And when you're on that rehab floor and you see the other families going through it, and you realize that some of those people don't have any of those things, or, you know, don't have insurance to cover the bills. So anyway, so my family, I started the foundation. Two things: one, to raise money for research. Kind of hopeful, you know, I was hopeful that someday I'd walk again. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I do think there's some therapies and breakthroughs that'll come that'll make me more independent. And then secondly, we purchased adaptive equipment grants for individuals. So wheelchairs, voice-activated computers, simple home modifications. It's pretty amazing what people can do with a disability if they've just got the right technology, the right equipment. So we provide those things, and it's been a good thing. But it's growing, and it's kind of consuming me, and we're kind of hiring a full-time staff member and getting some office space. And
love it.
And growth is fun, but sometimes it's...
It comes at a cost.
It does come at a cost.
Yeah.
But looking forward to the opportunities ahead with that.
But you're doing good things, so you should grow, right, and get bigger and help more people.
No, so I am looking forward to that.
Sorry about that. On the one hand.
Yeah, that was right back at you.
Yeah. What do you recommend? There are people out there, like I said earlier, that are having a tough time getting motivated, that are saying to themselves, you know, I'm stuck in a relationship, I don't know if this is right for me, I can't get ahead, I wanted to get this extra job, I might start a business. How do you got a couple of tips to help people?
I'm a big fan of realizing you have choices. You always have choices. And it's just sort of taking control of those choices, realizing that, yeah, sometimes you got to, you know, take a leap, take a risk, and again, one of the little pieces is just taking a moment to think about, why, what does make you happy? You know, and I've broken it down to three things. I just enjoy simple moments with my family and my friends. But in this society, you got to create those moments. You got to create those times. I enjoy good food. As a quadriplegic, trying to figure out ways to challenge myself, and I do it through food. I love trying new foods. I love all kinds of different ethnic food and cooking, pulling recipes off the internet. And thirdly, I've got a little cottage up in Vermont.
Where in Vermont?
Colchester, Vermont, right outside of Burlington.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite place on earth to go, and that's where I get a little peace. That's where I kind of recharge.
We know very much about Vermont. We have a farm in Vermont. Marion's up the street.
I love it.
I think it's the greatest place in the world, aside from some quirky things about the state.
But, you know, literally rolling out onto my deck, my shirt off, feeling the warm sun on my shoulders, watching the sailboats out on Lake Champlain. It's, you know, those are the moments that I crave. And what I figured out is if I've included one or more of those things in my day, whether it's just a conversation with
good
a
conversation,
close friend, you know,
good food and a sailboat,
and just any time spent in Vermont.
Yeah.
So I call them my quality life goals. I've got career goals. Yeah, I've got other goals. But the ones that are probably most important are those quality life goals. And those are three things for me, and I try to hold them close. I try to keep them at the top of my priority list. And
do you ever, one of the tricks I do for myself to get through and push through tough times, tough days, is I say, well, it could be worse. Do you do that?
I play that game all the time, and all I do is, you know, you look at my simply my injury level. I mean, I'm a C4 or 5 quadriplegic guy. If I just had my left arm, you know, I could probably drive. I'd be able to move both my arms. But thank God I'm not at C2 or C3 and I'm stuck on a ventilator.
Right.
And so I always realize that there are people much worse than I am. All I got to do is turn on the news and see the refugees all, you know, from Syria and Afghanistan and then some of the different issues going on around the world. And it doesn't...
Because I think, like, you know, the classic saying of the glass is half full or the glass is half empty. And so I think you should look at life. This is my opinion. I want your opinion. You should look at life like the glass is half full, right? And there's all this opportunity and all these great things to do. But reflect that the glass could be half, like things could be worse.
It's true, but it's interesting. Colin, I think if we're honest with ourselves, that more often than not, that glass is pretty full.
Yeah,
you know, that's when we
300 interviews, the glass is pretty full. Another one, you nailed.
You know, it's
not half empty or half full. It's full. The glass is full.
It really
it's
is.
Overflowing.
It's not even close. I mean, absolutely. If you're living in this country and you've got your health and your glass is overflowing.
Yeah. And, it's a big glass.
It is a big glass, and it's just, you know. The other thing that's gotten me through this, I continuously have a sense of being grateful, and I know there's books and
but that grateful is coming from, again, reflecting back and say, well, I could be living in Syria.
Absolutely,
right?
And it's also just, you know, I got two parents, happily married, healthy. I mean, right. How fortunate is that? I've got an incredible, you know, my sister.
Gratitude's powerful, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're doing more and more studies on that. And you know, it's certainly proven to be true, and I think sort of that pride, the gratitude, kind of the outlook on kind of facing the challenges that choose you, and also choosing my challenges and realizing I had a choice in a lot of it, and sometimes I think even in being in this wheelchair, I look at the people around me, and I do have to sit, I do have to watch, I do have to, you know, it's a unique perspective. And a lot of times I look at people and think, God, I think I'm happier than a lot of those able-bodied people.
No doubt about it.
So it's kind of
look at all the people that take their own lives and they're on top of the world as far as, you know, economically and so forth.
Absolutely.
Or don't take care of the body they have.
Right?
Well, and the thing that I love about what you do, and I'll be honest, I miss competing. Yeah. I miss competing. And... you know, the clock never lies. You know,
Another one.
You know, it's there. You know, you know whether you're making progress. You know whether you're falling back. I miss competing. I'll find myself literally just watching, you know, the women's NCAA softball tournament. I love watching people compete. You know, and just that seeing that thrill of victory. You know, the whole wild world of sports, you know, saying the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat, and I'll find just tears rolling down my cheeks just watching people get to experience that, and I miss it.
Where do you live? How far from here?
I live. Spend a lot of time in Boston. Spend a lot of time in Vermont. And I spend a lot of time down in Florida, actually. So
got it.
I get it.
You just happen to be in town.
I'm around for So this is where the Travis Wright Foundation is based out of. So.
Got it.
I do a lot with that here in Boston.
I don't know. Well, anyway, that was awesome. Let's wrap it up.
All right.
Elbow bump.
Give it to me. There we go. Thank you.
And again, people want to find out more. TravisRoyFoundation.org.
Be great.
You don't donate. We show up at your house with a black van and throw you into a, I don't know, we'll do something with them.
Good. And I appreciate the time. This has been fun.
It's good.
All right. So what did you guys think? Was it everything I told you it was going to be?
And
was he that
silence? I mean, unbelievable,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Absolutely. I think his whole concept of 11 seconds changing the entire course of your life just really makes you stop and have pause and have a lot of gratitude and look at the, you know, just the way he conducts and lives his life.
Well, I think it's a powerful story. When he's sitting there and he's walking you through and he's telling you he used to play hockey and all this kind of stuff. But you're kind of looking at him, you're trying to figure out, okay, at what level or whatever. And you say, I mean, he's playing at college level hockey at Division I on the, you know, and he got scholarships to the best schools in the country for hockey. And his first shift on the ice, and he goes out, and then they had the video of him laying there. I mean, when I was watching it, it was crushing as a viewer. You know, can imagine. But,
so we should appreciate every moment. You appreciate every moment. You can't complain about anything. Period. End of story. Right.
Well, but also to look at, I mean, that he's not the only person that's ever happened to. And some people are out there being interviewed for podcasts because they're inspiring people and making a difference in the world, and other people aren't. And so, you know, life is going to happen. You know, it's going to be a car accident. It's going to be a disease that you have no control over. It's going to be a situation like that. But then what are you going to do with it? And you know, they say that what happens to you isn't what's going to determine the quality of your life. It's what you do with it.
Obstacles have everyone's address.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Right. Never heard that.
I just made it up.
Trademark.
What slide did you take that on? That was nice.
No, but absolutely, right? Stuff is going to happen. And
like
so,
when he came up to the Spartan office.
What you don't know, and you didn't see on the film, was when the interview was over, I was so excited and so inspired that I said, you got to come up 5 stories and you got to come into the Spartan office. We've got 100 people in there. They've got to meet you. Oh, yeah, no problem. So I went up the stairs and I was getting him set in the freight elevator. And when I got upstairs, they said, wait a minute, you can't bring him in the freight elevator. I said, ridiculous. We're getting him in the freight elevator. We're making space. Get everything out. Remove the fire exit. We're getting him in. They were right because I got him in and then the elevator broke. And so he was stuck on our floor for close to 5 hours. But he didn't complain.
That's
he didn't
amazing.
Complain about anything. And it was fantastic for the group at Spartan to really see how powerful this guy is and that mindset is.
Yeah, and you know what else I really like to think? I'm looking on his website and stuff. He has, I think it's like 15 or 16 tips for non-wheelchair people, right? Just like some etiquette around that. And I think that's really important. You know, it's saying like, don't talk over their heads to the caregivers and not acknowledge them. Like, don't just touch them or their wheelchair. It's an extension of their body. Like all these different types of things. I mean, he's been at the forefront of leading spinal cord injury research and has really done massive amounts for raising grant money and doing research in that whole sector. But also just like a general awareness because it's something that people aren't familiar with or know how to really conduct themselves in society. And it's really important to have someone with such good spirit be able to say, like, let's normalize this and then have a conversation around it.
When you meet people like this, it really does kind of just... It makes you reevaluate yourself, right? So, and one of the other interviews we did that hasn't aired yet, we were talking about an SF soldier named Romy Camargo, who was very similar to this, and shot in the neck, paralyzed, thought he was going to die in Afghanistan. They brought him back. I mean, he's full paraplegic, on a board, trouble speaking, can't move anything. Wasn't ever going to walk again, wasn't going to talk, all those kinds of things, through his own force of will and personality. Somehow he flew with his own money to Europe to do stem cell research and everything else, came back. Anyway, one thing has led to another. He now owns and operates a rehab center in Tampa for paraplegics that he runs from his wheelchair, having other people learn how to walk and rehab and stuff.
Wow.
And he's the only owner-operator in the country. So he reminds me very much of Travis Roy. And mm-hmm. Their circumstances are different, but where they ended up are the same, and how they've just not let that destroy their lives, and you know, how they've taken that, what's happened to them, to kind of create their life, if you will. And they're really amazing people.
Well, and the other great thing about that is not just create their life, and this is something that we see a lot in the people interview,
right?
To impact others,
right.
Exactly, to find a purpose greater than themselves. And so it's not just how can I recover from this, it's how can I use this to actually go out and make a difference in the world. And that's incredible. When you look at the average person who has all the capacities and all the abilities in the world, gets up in the morning and thinks, how can I get through my day? You know, how with all the misfortune life is going to heap on me, as in life isn't going to heap on me because you have every advantage. But the average person gets up and they just look at, how am I going to get more for me today? And here are people who have learned through hardship that not only do they still have enough, but they have extra capacity. And that's so, so powerful. So, you know, I hope that's something that people get by watching this podcast, is that it isn't enough to get up and think, what can I do for me today? You know, you have all these people who have experienced disadvantages that you haven't even experienced, and they're getting up in the morning saying, what can I do for other people? So it's funny, I want to personally challenge every watcher, every listener, to look at your own life exactly where you are right now and say, how can I go out and make a positive impact in the world for others? And I think you'll find that your life will expand drastically, just like it has for people like Travis Roy.
No doubt about it.
Thank you for watching another epic story of success. If you like our message, please share Spartan Up with your friends and subscribe on iTunes, YouTube, or wherever you catch our show, maybe in the woods. Spartan Up is brought to you by Spartan Race. To find a race near you, visit Spartan.com.